Hey, everybody. My name is April Lovett.
And my name is Daryl Lovett.
We've been together for 5 years, and we have a 3-year-old sweet and sassy little girl, an adorable and smiley baby boy, and our fur child, our dog, Lainey.
That's right. We also work our 9-to-5 jobs together, we teach together, and we co-own The Lovett Company.
That's right. We do so much together, and we wanted to share some of our tips and tricks for living out our 24/7 relationship.
Oh, yes. A relationship that is all day, every day.
Plus, we want to share with you how we manage to run our side business alongside full-time jobs and still find time for kids, chores, and fun. So in this podcast, the Success in Black and White podcast, we'll be talking about working towards success, overcoming failures, and just living our everyday lives.
So get ready. We're going to be bringing to you real talk concepts every week as we share some of our stories, best practices, as well as talk to guests about how they have found success by doing extraordinary things in their everyday lives.
Hey, good people. We're back again.
What's up, everybody? We are back in the house.
Yeah, another episode.
Again with another episode of Success in Black and White.
Why are you talking so low?
The podcast. No, I'm talking low because my voice is shot right now. I've been fighting a sinus infection and obviously continuing to work and doing what I do. My voice is gone. And I'm fighting right now to get through this. But for the people, I got to do it. I guess we can tell them what's going on right now.
Yeah, I think we should. Well, we're sitting on our living room floor, which usually we try to use a recording studio.
Yes.
But that's not the case this time because
Let me start from the beginning.
A dual mic
podcast couple. Oh, yeah. I guess that's our life update. We are a dual mic podcast couple.
So which is super exciting.
She has her own mic and I have my own mic, which is good for both of us.
Yeah, because we can like do our own thing, but still talk to each other, which is good.
And not headbutt each other in the process.
Yeah, that's true. But with that came some technical challenges.
Definitely. Technical difficulties.
Yeah, for sure. So we are actually re-recording this episode, which is part 4 of our series on interracial relationships. And it's something that we recorded previously, like I think probably the first week of January.
Yeah, we recorded this a while ago and it was bomb fire.
Yeah. Except that my voice was so distorted. It was difficult to hear.
So loud. And we sent it to our engineer and our engineer educated us on setting games and setting volumes and doing all of that stuff.
We're learning.
He educated us on it. And then after he educated us, he said, I can't do anything with this crap. And we listened to it and I was like, there is no way we can put this trash out. Because if you've listened to previous episodes, you know how I am and how April is on quality. And we want to make sure that what we're putting out is good quality. And we know that it reflects us and represents us. So there was no way that we were going to put that episode out, even though it was fire.
Yeah, the content was really good. But we felt like the topic has, it's been something that we've been talking about both with each other, with people that have been listening, who have been reaching out to us.
Absolutely.
And we've been doing other interviews too, related to this topic. After people listen to our podcast, we've had people reach out and want to do interviews about it, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we feel comfortable enough to still bring you fire content on our last episode in this series.
This episode right here is going to be fire too.
That's
right. If you want to listen to the trash version, nah, I can't even let y'all hear it. My bad. I was going to say, let us know and we'll send you the original.
Oh gosh.
The OG copy.
But it's hard to listen to and not be, it's just hard to, the,
we don't want y'all thinking of us in that way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Hey. It's kind of like if somebody's wearing a bad wig and nobody tell them about it. You know what I mean?
That's one way to look at it.
I don't know where that came from. Oh, don't make me laugh, baby. Don't make me laugh.
Okay, I'm sorry. Your throat. No, it's all good. So we've got some. We know we're gonna record a better episode already, but we are sitting on the living room floor again because we couldn't get our studio at the last minute. And Daryl's sick, and we've got the dog keeping us company. So you'll probably hear shake, 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 and some growls. And you know.
My goodness, she is showing out already tonight. When we were setting up, she just stood right in front of us and just like started snorting at us. And I was like, what are you doing? Go lay down.
She's showing up. You don't never do this,
but she probably see us setting up and probably curious as to like, okay, y'all, what are y'all doing?
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure she is. Well,
so I guess that was kind of my bad, baby. I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay.
I was going to say, I guess that was kind of like a big around the world update.
Yeah. So, life and podcast and everything else. Yeah. And so we're going to start into our episode talking about the fourth in this series on interracial relationships.
Yes. I had to go find my notes from this one.
I did too. I know. but I'm excited about it because this is, we're going to go over even more research that I found.
Oh, you're going to add more to it?
Yeah, I think you are too.
So we're doing a real redo. Oh my goodness.
Okay. You're so silly.
No, seriously, I didn't know we were going to do a real redo.
Yeah, because we got to give the people what they need.
Okay. So we're doing a re-record, and we gonna, oh my goodness, I like that. Bring it then.
Yeah, we're gonna bring it. So we're gonna talk about this, but if you are just tuning in for the first time and you're really curious about what we're talking about in this podcast series about interracial relationships, we did a 4-part series. Parts 1, 2, and 3 are currently available through any podcast platform that you listen to. So if this is your first one, go back and listen to 1, 2, 3, and 4 because they all go together. And
yeah, check it out for context.
Yeah.
Because some people have jumped in the middle. And then they're kind of like, oh, and then they went back. So obviously listen to this one, but definitely go back and check out 1, 2, and 3 for context so that you kind of understand how we got to the point that we're at talking about the children.
And you know what? If you need even more context, if you're like, how did Daryl and April even meet each other? Go all the way back to episode 1, the nitty gritty, and listen. And then listen to the rest of them because they're all really good. So today, let's talk about the last and final topic in this particular series about raising multiracial children.
Yeah, go ahead, baby. I'm sipping my tea right now.
I know you are sipping your tea.
Like, I'm sipping my tea to get my voice right. Not like, ooh, what's the business tea?
You do kind of look like you're high and mighty with your tea cup.
What my pinky doing?
Your pinky up. So
my pinky's up.
His pinky's up.
All right. Sorry. Come on. Stay focused, Daryl.
Yeah. What kind of meds are you taking?
hey, don't be putting my business out there like that. But no, seriously, though, I guess this is what they get when we're not in the studio. Because in the studio, like, we're in a studio.
Daryl's focused.
And, like, I'm focused because we have a allotted time that we have to be in the studio and be out the studio. So I'm focused, but we at the crib. Like, I'm just like, what's up? But also, keep me on track, baby, because I know we're trying to keep the time.
That's right. That's right. So
she put her foot over here on my foot. I guess that means she's going to kick me when I talk to her. Go ahead, baby. I'm sorry.
So I just wanted to go over. So this is an interesting. I saw an episode of the National Geographic, and it was from April 2018, so this past year. And I saw it in my therapist's office, and I was like, "Can I steal this copy of your National Geographic?" And he was like, "Why don't you bring it back? But you can borrow it." So it was really cool because it was the black and white issue, and that was the actual like title of that issue. And what it really covered was there were 4 topics that it covered: the science of race, the dawn of the white minority, why we divide ourselves by color, and driving while black. So just from this episode, we read through the episode and we really wanted to just touch on a few points that I thought were interesting. And I think you thought were interesting.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
On the cover of this episode was a set of fraternal twins who were from England, and they were born to a white mother and a black father. So the interesting thing about this, and I think people always think like, oh, the babies will have a good, you know, mixture of both colors of skin and they'll be somewhere in the middle. Maybe like if the mother is white and the father is black, they'll be a brown or like a light brown, you know, who knows? And so I think that's what people kind of think. But this was interesting because as fraternal twins, one twin was white and one twin was black, like not any deviation from that. And so that was super, super interesting. So they interviewed them and they interviewed this family. And then they interviewed a statistical geneticist, Alicia Martin. And so she says that it's not that rare that a biracial couple would have fraternal twins who each look more like one parent than the other. The probability would be different for each couple, depending on their genetics. So fraternal twins account for 1 in 100 births. When a biracial couple has fraternal twins, the traits that emerge in each child depends on numerous variables, including where the parents' ancestors are from and complex pigment genetics. So I thought that was interesting because it kind of gives an insight on the genetic side.
That was very interesting. And before like we read this article and then I did some further research, I was under the assumption of exactly what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Black father or mother, white father or mother, and the child is going to come out light brown.
Yeah.
And I was under that assumption until we read this article, and then I continued to do some additional research and found out all of the actual, I guess, science behind it, and I was baffled.
Yeah. And there's a lot, we'll get into it in just a few minutes, but there's a lot of actual science behind skin color. And we'll talk about this, but there's not a lot of science behind race. And
right, absolutely,
that is the important distinction in this. But anyway, so this geneticist, Alicia Martin, went on to say, in addition, research on skin color is further complicated by a history of study biases, which means we know more about what makes lighter skin light than what makes darker skin dark. And I think that's true. I mean, that makes complete sense based on the history, and just the history of America and the history of science in America. I'm not surprised at all by that.
I agree with you on that. Like, I'm not shocked at all.
No. She also says that skin color is not a binary trait that only has two possibilities. Like, you either get one or the other. So kind of like what we saw with the twins, which was interesting, but it's a quantitative trait, meaning that it takes into account all genes from every ancestor and sometimes more prominently displays that of one bloodline than another.
That was the crazy part to me. I'm just like, what?
But you know what? I think we see this with Anna and Bon.
Yeah, we do.
We do. Because yeah, with Anna, she is, she's a lot darker than Bon. I mean, she's still in like a very, very good mixture between our skin colors.
Yeah, but she is darker than he is.
She
like
is
right
darker.
Now, she's darker than
her
he is.
Hair is very different. Even as a baby, her hair was different than his is now.
Yeah, her hair is like tight curls.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost has like, well, when I did have hair, like a little bit more of the texture like that my hair had.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like that fine, flowy. It's like a tight, curly,
right,
you know, thick type of hair.
Right. And then Vaughn, is his skin color is similar. He is a little bit lighter.
Yeah, he is. He is.
But he is 9 months.
Yeah.
So I mean, that could change too as he gets older. But at the same time, like, she has very dark features.
Yeah, very dark features.
Yeah. And then he has very, his features are coming through, so the dominant ones are more yours, but he has blue eyes.
Oh my goodness. Like, yes, the boy has blue eyes with like a gray tint.
Oh, they're so cute.
That's going to be trouble. Oh my goodness. Like, obviously he's going to look like, you know, both of us. So he's going to be a handsome little fella, but you throw in the blue eyes with the curly hair. Oh my goodness. Like, me and him gonna have to sit down and have the talks early.
Yeah.
Like, hey, buddy.
He already loves the ladies too.
Let me holler at you real quick. Cause when we go pick him up from daycare.
Yep.
Like, all the ladies in there just holding him and hugging him and passing him around and talking about his eyes and just rubbing his head. I'm like, hey,
happens all day at daycare?
Yeah, I'm like, slow your roll.
It's so funny because even when we dropped him off this morning, he loves his teacher so much. He was just like jumping out of our arms.
My feelings got hurt.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to hug my boy.
I mean, she's pretty, but come on, man. Hold it together.
I'm trying to hug my boy and say, hey, make it a great day. And that's what I tell my kids every day. I drop them off at school. And I tell him that as well, even though he can't comprehend. But I tell him to make it a great day. So I'm telling him, you know, hey, Vaughn, make it a great. Hey, where you going? Come here. I didn't finish telling you that. Come on, man. You know what we do. Make it a great day. Give me a hug. Give me a kiss. And then I pass you off. This dude literally tried to leap out of my arms into his teacher's arms.
Just a ladies' man. He's a ladies' man. So I also wanted to talk about the science of skin color, because this was a major part of this issue and was really enlightening for me. And so to get a little bit behind the science of skin color in every human is determined by a slight tweak in one of the 20,000 base chains of one gene out of the 24,000 genes that we all have.
That is crazy.
Now do that multiplication, right?
That math. Yeah. That is crazy.
Right. So it's just a tiny, tiny variant. And that's what it was really saying in this magazine, is that every human is basically 99.999% exactly the same, with minor, minor tweaks in genes.
That is crazy.
Yeah. So it really goes back into like the history and I can't remember the term for it right now. Anthropology, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Of ancestors and the reason that skin color is highly variable. So what it said was skin color highly correlates to latitude. For instance, if your ancestors lived near the equator, they most likely developed darker skin, which was useful to shield for ultraviolet radiation.
Yep, that's true.
Right. But then if your ancestors lived near the poles, where the issue was way too little sun, then they probably had paler skin, which interestingly enough helps promote vitamin D production without much sunlight. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So science basically shows us that variants in skin color are accidents of history, and they're solely based on where your ancestors decided to settle down and kind of in relation to sun exposure and really not much else. That's really it. That's all skin color is.
Yeah. I'm trying to keep it together.
I know you're struggling. Yes. I thought that was interesting, thinking about the fact that I am so very light white, and you are darker. And it just makes me wonder, like, where does our lineage go back?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It's very interesting. The magazine also talked about about white versus minority populations by age, and how the white majority population is shifting actually fairly quickly. So what it was saying is that literally in the next 2 years, the under 18 population will have shifted from a majority white to, stick with me now, a majority minority.
Wow.
Basically meaning that a majority of all people under the age of 18
are going to be
minorities, or what we consider minorities, but they'll become the majority. Right. Wow. So, yeah. So that I thought was super interesting. And yeah, that's a majority. I saved one story for kind of the end when we close, but that's a majority of what I found from Time.
Wow.
So now I'm going to talk about the research that we did with our 30 couples.
Okay.
So the out of the 30 couples that we interviewed, we found out that 46% of them have children together. And so we asked a bunch of questions, actually from all 30 of our couples, and a lot of them gave us feedback. And so we, again, took that qualitative and turned it into a couple percentages, and then we're going to share their stories too. But 57% of the couples said, say the question. So we asked the question, how will you ensure that your children know and respect both of your cultures, backgrounds, and races?
Yes.
And 57% said that they would talk to their kids often about their backgrounds and how they fit into society. 50% said that they would or are raising their children in a bilingual household, which is super cool.
That is awesome.
I know. I wish we could do that. But we're not a bilingual couple.
It depends on what you consider bilingual.
Oh, we can unpack that later.
Yeah.
29% said that they do or would create traditions that incorporate both of their backgrounds. 22% said that they do or would visit both families often. And 14% said that they would or do make concerted efforts to visit both families and countries often. So I think I'm going to get into the stories because, again, we have powerful stories that we got from people. And thank you so much to our couples who are willing to share these stories. But I'm going to start with this one where the wife is Irish Canadian and the husband is Bayesian African Canadian. I hope that I said that right.
That was a good go at it, even
if you didn't. Thank you. So here, oh my goodness, now I'm getting your coughs.
No, both of us can't have it.
I know. Excuse me for that. But I was going to say, so here's her story. She says, our girls are 2 and 3. My father lives in a small town in Northwest Ontario. We were visiting and I forgot my girls' hair products. I went by myself to the local Walmart in this small town of about 5,000 people and was looking for the ethnic hair aisle that is in most Walmarts. When I couldn't find it, I asked a middle-aged woman if they had the products that I was looking for. She laughed in my face and asked why the hell I would need that. I told her it's for black hair. She said, okay. I explained to her that my girls were black and she just looked at me like I'd lost my mind. She said, well, we don't have much of a need for products of those kind here. First off, I didn't know what to say, so I just said thank you and walked away. But her choice of words and the attitude in which she said it made me realize that she was a racist. As I was driving back to our hotel, I was overcome with emotion. I was mad at myself for not asking for the manager or for telling her off. Then I was upset because without my children in tow, I worried that people did not respect that they are mine just because they are not my skin color. Then I tried to imagine other situations that they might face, and I quickly asked myself, how do I use my white privilege to protect them? I realized that I'm a strong woman, and it's now my responsibility to prepare them for situations like this one. How to recognize systemic racism and what they should do if they find themselves in worse situations. I have many open discussions with my mother-in-law, and I pray every day that they will understand that they may not look fully like their father or their mother, but that's okay. They are themselves, and that's enough.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crazy. That just reminded me of like a story for us. I don't know if this is the right place or time for me to share it, but
I don't know what story you got.
When we were going to the Dominican Republic
at the airport. Oh, I remember that. Yeah. I remember that, yeah.
So, well, I guess that was kind of my cue of like, no, tell it.
Yeah, tell it.
Y'all should see her looking at me. Those eyes stretched and it was like, oh boy, here we go. No, but seriously though, excuse me, hold on for a second. We were traveling to the Dominican Republic, and if you all know, if you've listened to previous episodes, I'm a very meticulous and process-oriented and structured person, so I made sure all of our suitcases were packed appropriately, and what we were checking and what we were carrying on. So we were flying first class on this trip, and also with the kids, they put us in the priority lane, so our stuff kind of got set up front, and then we went straight through the line to the front on the screening side. And as we were screening, We had a suitcase that we were carrying on for the kids, or for the kids, for Anna. Jeez, for Anna, she
not
was
yet.
Vaughn was not here yet, but we were carrying on for Anna, and I'm thinking ahead for future traveling. If y'all are trying to figure out what happened there, I'm like, dang, we travel now. I got to pack for the kids. But no, we had Anna's suitcase, and in her suitcase was a change of clothes, some toys, some things for her, a couple of accessories for us. And a part of her, I guess her suitcase was her hair products and things, because we wanted to make sure that those got on and didn't get damaged in the process. So when we got to the line and they were screening it, the guy said, hey, you got something in here that, you know, we can't allow you to take. So when he opened up the bag, he pulled out her hair. It's like a moisturizer conditioner that was pretty expensive, and it was for her hair, and it kind of helped us tame it a little bit. So I told him, I said, hey, do you think I have time to run back over here and put this in one of the bags that we checked? And he made a call on the little intercom thing or whatever, and he was like, yeah, you'll be good. You just got to get there quick though. So I grabbed it and I sprinted back to where we checked our suitcases. And when I got in line there, you know, I had to wait through a couple of people. I mean, I got to the front and I kind of explained to the lady what was going on. And I had our little tag so that she knew which suitcase to pull off for me to put it in. And when she saw what I had in my hand, she looked at me and she said, you came all the way back over here from the screening to put that in the suitcase? And I was like, yeah, this is for my daughter. This is for her hair. We're getting ready to go to the Dominican Republic for a week. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, we were able to keep it. And she was like, oh, that's kind of silly. Why did you run all the way over here to put that in the suitcase? You could have just tossed that away and just threw some water in her hair and put it in the ponytail. She would have been all right. So immediately, like when she said that, it just kind of was like, she smacked me in the face and it kind of startled me. And I looked at her and I was just kind of like, wait a minute, this lady didn't just say what I thought she said. This lady said, you should have just threw it away and then just throw some water in her hair and put it in a ponytail. So before I could even kind of like get words out, because I was trying to process it, and the airports can already be kind of, you know, frustrating and build up anxiety, these two black women intervened on my behalf and they practically ripped this lady a new one. They say, excuse me, ma'am, I don't know if you know or not, but you just can't throw water in our hair and put it in a ponytail. It doesn't work like that. How dare you even say that to him? If he wants to put that in the suitcase for his daughter, then you should just open the suitcase. It's not your business to how far he came to put it in there.
What'd she do?
Her face just like went like cold. It's like all the blood just like left from her face. It just turned like white. And she was just like, she had a look like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so sorry. Like, please don't beat me up in the airport.
Oh,
I'm just like, she's straight tripping today. She own one. So the black ladies continue to tell her, like, if you understood anything about our hair texture and what we have to go through to maintain it, mm-hmm. then you wouldn't have a comment to say like that. I was just standing there and I was like, yeah, what they just said. And, you know, I turned around and I was like, I appreciate that so much. I really am glad that y'all were here and y'all kind of intervened and stepped in on my behalf, because I don't know what I would have said to that lady. And they said, oh, no problem. And then they commended me. It was like, we think it's pretty cool that you care enough about your daughter's appearance and her hair that you would do that for her hair product. And then they said, not only that, we use the same product and that's some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, that's what's up. Well, y'all have a good flight. And then I looked back at the other lady and gave her the mean mug and was like, open my suitcase so I can put this in there.
It's just, it's interesting because how can you make an assumption? It was a microaggression.
Yeah.
And B, you're making an assumption about somebody else's child. Like, you should never do that, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, but them black women though, they like had my back. They was like, oh no, not today.
That's good.
You ain't finna say this and do this today. But then I was wondering, I was like, well, what if you were standing right there with me?
I wonder that too.
I don't know what they would have said.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. I wonder.
But
almost luckily I wasn't, but you never know, you know? and to me, out of the story, I mean, definitely the hair, yes, and that's a big deal, and we want Anna and Vaughn to appreciate, but especially Anna to appreciate her hair and beautiful. And to take care of it, and we really attempt to do that with her. For me, what stuck out from this is when she said, well, a couple things. First, when she said, how do I use my white privilege to protect my children? And I think about that often because I wonder if there are ways that I use my white privilege to protect my children in certain situations.
Right, right.
Instead of teaching them what the world could throw at them later on.
And how to respond to those situations.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, so that's definitely a reflection of mine. And then she said, I think somewhere in the story, she said, oh yeah, she says, I was upset because without my children in tow, I worry that people did not respect that they are mine just because they are not my skin color. And for me, that's definitely a fear of mine, is that if I am out with the kids without you, that people are not going to associate them with me.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, and or not think that I'm their mother. And I've had an, I'll share a little bit later, but I've had an incident before where that was basically the case.
Who they gonna think you are then?
Right.
The nanny.
The nanny. Like, nah. We can get a nanny.
Yeah, we can't afford a nanny, but I'm with you on that, baby.
Yeah. So the next example from one of our couples, the wife is white. The husband is half Hispanic and half Japanese. So she says, we do have a 14-year-old boy and an 11-year-old girl. One of my biggest things with kids is that from the time they were born, people assume they are adopted because they look more like their dad. I've received so many rude comments that are sometimes hard to ignore. We teach them, and in time, they will have a better understanding. But at their ages, I think it's difficult to know where they fit in and who they identify with.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be a challenge too.
Yeah, I think so.
I definitely think it's going to be a challenge.
I do. Yes, I agree. I think though not when we're together, because it's pretty clear.
It is.
Like, it's, when we're out as a family, yeah, it's absolutely obvious.
It's,
yeah,
very obvious.
But then I wonder, like, when they're with me, it probably looks like I adopted them or I'm the nanny.
Yeah.
But when they're with you, do you think that people see it that way?
No, I don't think so. I think people are probably wondering, like, ooh, I wonder what their mama looked like.
Okay.
So that's what I think when I have them, because they are darker complexion.
Yeah, they are.
They have that curly hair, and obviously, like, the dominant features or the strong features are mine.
Right.
So I feel like people are probably just like, oh, I wonder what their mother looks like.
That's probably true. Yeah. So she's talking about how she's received many rude comments that are sometimes hard to ignore. I don't feel like this has really happened to us, but
no, not really. Not yet.
Right. Our kids are also younger.
Yeah, they're younger, and people like babies.
People love babies.
They love babies. Yeah. So we haven't experienced it yet, but when they get a little bit older, like, I'm trying to gear my nerves up because I know something crazy gonna happen.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to make sure that I represent our family well, and they can learn from me how to respond in an appropriate way.
Well, and I do have one story from when I was a brand new mom, like brand new, like Anna was our first. And so I was brand new mom with Anna, and she was 4 weeks old. And I went to this group. It was a breastfeeding group, which
the breastfeeding group story. Yeah, go ahead, baby. I love this story.
It's literally exactly what it sounds like, right? Like,
they
women
didn't invite me.
No, we did not invite you. Women basically come in, bring their babies, and like sit together and breastfeed, which I don't know. Maybe,
I mean, hold up, Lloyd, but before you continue this story, that was kind of like creepy. Like, not that I wanted to go in there and sit and watch these women do that, but that kind of sounded creepy, didn't it?
Oh,
like, they didn't invite me to the breastfeeding group.
That is a little creepy. But women would do this because it was a really good time. You had a lactation nurse there at the same time. Like, it was sponsored by the hospital. It totally made sense. So if you needed help, it was a great place to go. And then you just found support. Like, I know so many, some of my friends who found their good friends within that group, like with their very first child, and they've stayed friends.
Yeah, absolutely. You made some friends through that.
Yeah, which is really cool.
And the kids are all born around the same time and everything. So
natural play dates, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So Anna was 4 weeks. I think it was the very first time I took her, and it was my first time being a mom at all. So navigating that. And then it was my first time, obviously, my first time being a mom of a multiracial child. And so I got in, and even at 4 weeks, Anna, it was very clear that her dominance was coming from her father in her skin color and her skin tone and even her features. And not so much for me, because she was pretty dark even at 4 weeks.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah. And so I go in and I sit down with these women, and a couple people down from me looked over and was like, oh, she's so precious. And she was like, is she yours? Which I was like,
this is why they could not have me up in here. Oh, I would have jumped in so fast. I'm like, nah, this is our side hustle. We just in here breastfeeding random babies.
Oh my gosh.
We too can breastfeed your baby for X amount of dollars a month. Come on now. For real. Oh, is this yours? Gosh.
She did. She asked me that. She said, is she yours? And I was like, yeah. And so that's my first encounter with somebody thinking that, like, at 4 weeks, being a mom for 4 weeks.
Yeah, I want to talk about ignorant. Oh man, yes. I would have showed my butt, and I mean, I would have been a straight fool.
Well, so it gets better.
Please tell the next part of the story.
So then she proceeded to ask me if I put her out in the sun to tan.
That's what we doing around here. We getting random babies, breastfeeding them, and then taking them outside to get tan. Your baby too can be breastfed and tanned. For a small fee.
Oh my God.
Come on. Are you for real, lady? We just around here just getting random babies, breastfeeding them, and then taking them outside to tan.
It's a service, apparently. So that was kind of, I don't know. That was my very first encounter, as a brand new mom, and then as a mom of a multiracial child. And I don't think that was a microaggression or an intended.
Nah, that's just ignorance.
Yeah, it was like, literally
just straight ignorance.
Like, there was no other scenario in your mind that I could have had a partner with a different skin color. And so you thought I put my baby in the sunshine.
I'm saying this in the non-creepy way, but I wish I was up in there. So I could just like look at this lady sideways and be like, nah, man, we just in here just, you know,
we just have a
breastfeeding.
That's what we do.
Like, you know, breast milk is a hot commodity these days. You know what I'm saying?
That's what we do.
That's what we do. We got our side hustle. Like, come on, be for real.
So our next story, the wife is Puerto Rican and the husband is black. And she says, I will say this. They don't have kids. But she says, I will say this about having biracial kids. I'm terrified. I'm a light-skinned Puerto Rican who doesn't speak Spanish. I was always too Spanish for the Caucasians and too Blanca or white for the Spanish people. I don't want my children to feel the same. I don't want my children to feel like they can't be both, that they have to choose a side, or even worse, ignore both sides and mold to the majority.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, that's sad.
That's real.
That's
that's real.
And society, society will do it to you.
Society will do it. I don't want our children to feel, I want them to appreciate who they are in the fullness of who they are, of both of their backgrounds, of the context of how they were raised. And I know it's hard in school, especially K-12, trying to fit in and find your place.
Yes.
But this is a big concern of mine, is that they would try to identify more with one side or ignore it altogether and just try to fit in with the majority.
Yeah, I think it's going to be on us. But one of the things that is, I get, not really a concern, but something that I think about is that, like, our families and the dynamic of our families are so different. And when I say dynamic, I mean like the actual size of our families and the opportunities for them to engage with relatives.
Yeah.
To learn, you know, more about the culture and
kind of gain that confidence.
Yeah, the confidence, our respective size. Because my family is so big. So they're going to have a lot of opportunities at family reunions or just even some small family gatherings to meet a lot of cousins and a lot of people. And April's family is not as big. And I mean, I don't want to speak like reproduction into your family's life right now, but it's not that many of them. And like our kids' generations, they have like one set of cousins. That's it.
So hint, hint. Hint, hint.
No, don't do that to her. No, stop. Don't do that to your sister.
I'm just kidding.
When they ready, they'll,
we love you guys.
When they ready, they'll start. Yeah. But we know they listen, so she's trying to do like subliminal messages. But I'm saying though, that is something that I think about. I'm not really concerned because it's on us to make sure that we inform them of their heritage and their culture.
And you know, a conversation that we have or we have had pertaining to this comes down to school system.
Definitely.
And we've had the very candid talks with each other that we do not want our kids to attend a predominantly white institution.
Right.
And we don't want them to attend a predominantly black institution.
That's right.
We want there to be diversity all around. So not only do they not feel like they have to fit into one majority of where they're at, but they can appreciate other people's diversity.
Absolutely. And I think the way that the world is shifting and shaping into the minorities becoming the majority. Like, that's just good for everybody to just kind of live with each other together and learn about each other together, because that's the way that the world is shifting right now. Yeah. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Right. Absolutely.
So.
Yes, 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 yes. So our next story, the wife is white and the husband is mixed, half black and half white. And she says, half is probably not the best term.
No, they're both full of each size.
Yeah, I don't know
we
why
we made
I
a boo-boo. It's all good.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
We human, baby. We human.
Hey. So anyway, the story is,
we meant no harm by using the term half.
Apologies if that offended anybody, because that's not the term that we ever use with our kids.
Yeah, and we're not going back and editing this out. We made a mistake and we apologize.
Yeah. You know, we learn. So anyway, their story is, we have two children, a daughter who will be 7 soon and a son that is 1.5. I don't think we do anything specific to teach them to understand or respect both of our backgrounds, but rather we constantly preach respect, acceptance, and love among all people, regardless of skin color, religious affiliation, family structure, or anything they may come in contact with that is different than what they're used to. By teaching our children that differences are what makes each of us beautiful, I think they subconsciously learn that the differences within our family are just as beautiful and celebrated.
I think that's good. That was very well put.
I really think this is something that we can definitely look towards as we raise our kids, and how are we celebrating? Not just, yes, I want them to understand their cultural background and appreciate what makes them special and what makes them unique, but how are we teaching them to respect and appreciate other people who may be different race or maybe different?
That's very important. Very, very,
ethnicity,
very important.
Skin color, socioeconomic status, even, because it's important that they understand differences, and how just because you're different doesn't mean that you're better or worse or anything like that.
That's right. That's right.
It's really interesting, because I always wonder, what is it that, like, how are they? So my wonder is, they're three. Well, Vanna's young, so this doesn't matter right now, but Anna's three, and in her daycare group, it's a pretty diverse mix of students and of children. But what we have noticed is that we're the only interracial couple.
Right. Everybody else is.
Yeah. All the mommies and daddies are the same race.
Right.
I mean, different races amongst them, but together they're the same race.
Right.
And so I always just wonder, like, what do the kids think about it? Or like, how do they talk about it? Because we know they talk about it.
They definitely talk about it. Yeah, we found that out.
We did find that out. Anna came home one day and without prompting.
No prompting at all.
Yeah. She said, Daddy is brown. I'm brown. Mommy is white.
Yep. Just like that.
Yeah. And it just, I mean, obviously there's nothing, like, I don't think there's anything malicious.
No, there was nothing malicious. You're talking about 3-year-olds. They tell all the business.
They tell everything and they tell the truth.
They tell the truth. And most of the things that they say, oh, they hear at home.
Yeah, that is true.
So, I mean.
But it's so funny that they're having these, like,
philosophical conversations about
skin color and race. And they're 3, but they know they're smart. Yeah.
And it doesn't matter, though. That's the thing, because they love each other in that class. Huggies. I'm like, what? Y'all go sit down somewhere.
They love each other. Yeah.
But yeah, and it doesn't matter, but they do know.
And they talk about it. And they talk about it. If we know that they're talking about it this early, how do we prep them or help Anna at least? I mean, we can only control what we can control.
Right.
But how do we help Anna talk about her skin color in a way that is confident and prideful? How do we facilitate that conversation, right?
Right.
Let's see.
In a productive way.
Yes, in a productive way. Because
it'd be easy to say, oh, you don't got to listen to people who say this and who say that. And not all people are good and blase, blase. But I want her to be confident in her ability to express how she feels about who she is and be confident in that and sharing that with other people.
Agree. Me too. So. Yep. Yes. So I have another story. In this one, the wife is white, the husband is black and West Indian. And she says, we have 2 children. We raise them to know who both of us are, introduce them to the stories of our families. We talk about hard things like slavery and discrimination with them. We tell them the truth, like that they're both black and white and that they don't have to be one or the other. We celebrate things like their hair through literature and representation on TV and movies. We talk about hard things and current events as well. We want them to be well informed and for them to know that we will always listen and we make room for questions. We also make sure we talk about Caribbean culture and celebrate it through food and music often. We also try to surround them with diverse friendships and communities so they can hopefully appreciate differences and honor people who are different than they are. This is completely a work in progress, though, and we have harder days with lots of questions, but I believe that's all pretty normal.
Yeah, I think that's good information, and I think that that's something that we'll definitely have to, like, take into consideration. I think that's a good piece of advice for what they do for anyone who's going through a similar situation where you're raising multiracial kids, is to take that into consideration.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a last piece from Time that I wanted to read to kind of close this out. So do you have more to talk about?
No, the only thing that I have is just like a couple of, like, I guess, tips, or if not tips, just some suggestions or things that we're gonna do or that we've discussed that we're gonna incorporate into how we raise our kids, because I definitely don't want to leave this conversation without sharing that. You know, we always share that tad bit, so I wanted to share some of that with them as well. I don't know if you want me to do that now or at the end.
Yeah, I think you can do that now.
Yeah, so I think just from reading this article and doing some further research, like, there were like 3 common themes that multiracial kids really face when they're growing up that it was identified. And that was the confusion with self-identity, people identifying them incorrectly, and then the thoughtless comments, which we talked about earlier, which is just, you know, some of it is just straight ignorance. And then some of it is just the opportunity probably to just educate people.
Yeah.
So agree. I think that is something to just be mindful of, that, you know, those are things that multiracial kids deal with and will deal with. It's just the confusion of self-identity, people identifying them incorrectly, and then those thoughtless comments.
Yeah.
For us, I know we've talked about it, you know, a little here and there, and some things more in depth than others. But For us, we're going to try to avoid saying, you know what we said earlier, you're half this, you're half that, you're part this, you're part that.
Yep.
Because when you do that, like, that's when the breakdown comes. And you don't want to, like, identify them by breaking them down.
Right.
No, you're whole this and whole that, complete this and complete that, and embrace all of this that goes along with this part of your life. So
let me ask you a quick question.
Yeah, go for it.
So because we say that and we fully believe that, but at the same time, there's a very interesting trend in kind of figuring out your identity with things like ancestry, DNA.
Right, correct.
And so a lot of people, I know my family did it, and it was really interesting to get that information back, but a lot of it was a breakdown of percentage, kind of what, like, what your heritage was.
Right, absolutely. And I, you know what? I think that is very important to know and to have if you're able to do that. But at the same time, when you're talking about identity, mm-hmm. like as a person and how you identify, you know, identifying them wholly in who they are, whereas that breakdown is for history and for a lineage, you know what I mean? And it, I don't think it's like for a self identity purpose. Gotcha. So when you're self identifying, you're like, no, I'm, you know, I identify as this and this, and I'm all of this from this side, and I'm all of this from this side, and it makes me who I am completely.
Right.
Whereas when you're talking about lineage and you're talking about history and you're talking about bloodline or the science that we talked about earlier, that's when those components come in. And that's just a small portion, I think, of the conversation.
Gotcha.
Because you don't go around talking about, oh, yeah, it said I'm this percent, and I'm that percent. And then you follow that up with, that's who I identify with.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that that's kind of the difference between those two. But I do think it is very important to have that knowledge and to understand that for multiple reasons, if you are able to get that information.
Right. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So definitely something that was covered earlier is just that open line of communication, listening clearly to what the kids are saying that they feel, and making sure that they know that they are able to come to you comfortably and share frustrations, to share concerns, or to share just how they're feeling about the situation. And not to brush it off and say, oh, you know, you'll get over it. It's something you have to deal with, or people are stupid and don't listen to them, or, you know, making sure that you engage in a conversation, making sure that you stay clear of your biases, because we all have them. Because I know more about my side and what they will identify than April does about her side. So trust in her to make sure she fills in the gap and say, hey, this is you. This is a part of who you are, and these are some of the things that come along with that. And I can do the same from my side, but staying clear from biases of me trying to speak on behalf of April without her being there to give context, and vice versa.
Right.
Yeah. So then something else that was discussed is just exposure to, you know, diverse situations, diverse conversations, diverse culture. Trying to live in multicultural neighborhoods, try to travel to different areas and expose them to that.
Yes,
and
then travel.
Educate them during those processes.
Yeah.
I think is going to be a very valuable aspect and something that we're really going to strive to do, and we are going to do. And then just reinforcing, you know, the love and support, and just being honest with the kids about, you know, who they are. And if you don't know, just tell them you don't know, and we're gonna take this journey together and find out more. And then for people who may be listening who are not in our situations, and those tips aren't for you because you don't have multi racial kids, if you're on the other side and you know people with multiracial kids, or you or encounter them, know your personnel before making comments. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't go up to everybody or everybody's kids and ask crazy questions. I'm not going to say crazy because to you it might not be crazy, but ask questions or make comments if you don't know your personnel, because somebody's going to either go off on you be offended and not go off on you, but stop talking to you, or they're just going to be offended and let you know it. So know your personnel before you start making comments. And if you're wondering about what type of comments, like, oh my gosh, he or she is so handsome or pretty. Look at their skin. Oh my gosh, look at their hair. Can I touch their hair? Oh my gosh, their hair is so gorgeous. Oh my gosh, you guys make beautiful babies. That is amazing. They are going to be so pretty. Like,
and a lot of it in context of like, oh, I've always heard like, mixed race children are the cutest.
Are the cutest, yeah.
And it's kind of, that always rubs me a little bit the wrong way. I'm like
no personnel. If you can talk to the people like that. But if you don't know them and you have friends or know people or kids, like, just be careful. Just know your personnel before making the comments. And then we don't need no special treatment either. Like, we know our kids are multiracial. Sorry, they're gonna know that they're multiracial. So they don't need any special treatment or anything extra. Don't be extra. You know what I'm saying?
Daryl with the real talk.
Sorry, I just had to share that for the people, because I know everybody's probably like, well, I don't have multiracial kids, so how's this going to help me? I just gave you a couple of tips. Know your personnel and don't be extra. No special treatments. Either way, good or bad.
I agree. So in closing, I wanted to read one more piece from the Time magazine that I just thought was interesting. It was from a story that was titled The Rising Anxiety of the White American. So here's the excerpt I want to read for you guys. There are groups working to build cultural bridges. It's not surprising that many of them, such as the Hazleton Integration Project in Pennsylvania, focus on young people. The principal of the local high school says he knows better than to toss around bromides, such as kids today simply don't see race. That's not true. A recent survey found that young adults overwhelmingly believe that race relations in the U.S. grew worse last year. Shocking. Young people have inherited a diverse world. They attend school together, listen to each other's music, and date across the color line. What will it take to actually shift attitudes as young white people march into adulthood? Kids have found a way to do something that's rare among adults. They talk to each other. Yes, they roll their eyes and show annoyance, but they engage and they listen. They cheer for each other on the court and the football field, and they take for granted that a blonde homecoming queen from the advanced math and science program was crowned alongside a star student who came to the high school from the Dominican Republic.
That was like a perfect ending story. Wow.
Yeah. I really think that the younger generation, and we talked about it in the very beginning, about in the next 2 years, the under 18 crowd will be majority minority.
That's right.
And I think that the younger generation is really going to lead America to the most diverse it's ever been, but also the most inclusive it's probably ever been.
That's right. And through that, hopefully some education.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I think that's it for us tonight, right? Did you have anything else?
No, the redo. Okay. Hey, now that like I'm seeing how we did the redo, it's nothing like the first one, but it's still that fire.
It's still fire. It's still good.
Yeah, we covered all the same content though.
We did. Yep. And
we appreciate y'all too.
We do. We've been getting a lot of great feedback from this series.
Yeah, this series has been well received by a lot of people that appreciate us doing this, and we appreciate you back for listening. We appreciate everyone that contributed to this.
Yes.
We appreciate everyone that's supporting us and the people that contributed to this, because I know for them to have that story incorporated into this and to be shared out.
Yeah.
We know
it's
thankful.
Hard to tell the story.
Yeah, they're very thankful for that.
Mm-hmm. So we are grateful for
you. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So is that it, babe?
That's it.
All right. The next time y'all hear me, you know, I'll be sounding a lot better than this, but
definitely.
I had to do it for y'all. I love y'all. We appreciate y'all. We appreciate y'all's support. And hey, I had to take one for the team with my hot tea and, you know, put out something for y'all, because we just couldn't leave y'all hanging just because my voice was gone.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you, baby, for holding me down.
Hey, April and Keith Sweat for real over there are out. Oh my goodness,
come on. Why you had to add that into the... All right, y'all. Like, I'm about to go for real now. She just ruined the whole mood. I'm trying to appreciate my baby over there and show her some love for holding me down with my voice and stuff. And then she going to go and come at me like that. And she know how I feel about that.
Uh-huh.
All right, I'm done. I'm out.
All right. Bye. We'll talk at you guys again next week. Hey, everybody. If you like today's episode, please subscribe to the Success in Black and White podcast. You'll get notified every time a new episode is posted, which is every Tuesday.
If you loved this episode, help us spread the love. Rate and leave a review on our iTunes podcast episode. Also, share that you listen on social media and tag us on your posts. My social media handle is IamDarylLovett on all social media platforms.
And mine is April Dawn Lovett on all social media platforms as well. Thanks for listening. Oh my gosh, you sound like Keith Sweat.
Oh my goodness, really?
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, did it record?
Yeah.